number three of the triple option with RBKD. Alongside the All-American Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. No KD today. No KD this week. He is out on an averagely deserved vacation. Rod B's calling it well-deserved. I'm calling it averagely deserved. Shows what the two of us think
of
our
co-host. He missed a very action-packed show, if you will.
He has missed a very action-packed show. If you're just joining us, we've been spending a lot of today's program talking about Deucegate, which took place at the Horn Mothership at some point over the weekend during Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey earlier today. Chad Hastings found a small pile of dog crap in the corner of the Horn studio. He disposed of it properly, and we appreciate Chad for doing that. But Chad didn't find this present until a little after 2 o'clock today. So the dog gift was dropped at some point over the weekend.
Yeah.
So there was at least one weekend show that took place with dog crap in the studio.
You didn't find it?
And we had 4 hours of Bucky and Aaron this morning. Neither of them found it. We had 2 hours of Light the Tower this morning. They didn't find it.
I will say that Jeff Howe did, when he first turned on his mic to speak for the first time on Light the Tower, he did say it smells like, I think, vomit was his word. So he smelled it.
He just couldn't find it. He couldn't find it.
And Craig texted later and said, I'm just glad it wasn't a Todd Packer event.
Mm.
You office people will love the reference.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And then 2 hours of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey went by before finally Chad realized that there was, a pile of number two in the Horn studio.
Yeah, good Samaritan.
Yes. So we have spoken with Chad Hastings today. We have spoken with Aaron Hogan today. We go back to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline to welcome the other half of Mornings with Bucky and Aaron. He is Bucky Godbolt. And Bucky, you did a four-hour radio program earlier today without noticing that there was a pile of dog crap within a few feet of you. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel stupid.
Were you?
I mean, do you see the workout stuff that I have in here? And I'm on the floor
in
the studio on a lot of occasions with my hands on the ground.
Yes.
So I'll tell you where that pile of crap came from. It's those clowns that do a show on Sunday mornings, the Outdoor Adventures or whatever it is, Mr. Green Jeans, Butt Rash, and the Gatekeeper.
I don't think those are their names. But you're accusing people? You've got to...
No, because I got down to the nuts and bolts of this because nobody really wants to know the truth. But the truth is I talked to Sam Pica and found out that the same dudes that were talking about homeless people having pets, and how is that possible for homeless people to take care of a pet? If they have a dog, they're too poor to have a pet and all this. They were going on their... I guess, outdoor rant / political rant on a Sunday morning. And they talked about how it's embarrassing for these people that are just don't have anything to have pets while their dog is in there crapping in the corner. At least their dogs crap outdoors.
I mean,
it's the most disgusting, unbelievable thing that you can talk about. From one bunch of hypocrites to nobody.
All right.
They're in there with their silly ass dogs crapping in the corner and talking about homeless people and their dogs. How ironic is that?
So, wow.
So I've got to ask you, Buck, because you brought up the workout equipment, and yes, you do some sort of workout every day. Did you do any sort of workout this morning?
I did. I was on the floor, but I was over by the TV.
Okay.
I don't know which corner was in that these non-homeless dudes bringing in their pets to crap and piss all over the place on a Sunday. And then for us to have to put our hands in that studio on a Monday. It's totally ridiculous.
Yes.
And so perfectly hypocritical.
That's
so great about that. A wonderful outdoor show that doesn't give you anything about the weather of where's the fishing at. But they're spending their time worried about the homeless. Isn't that wonderful? While Poncho's pissing and pooping in the corner.
Poncho?
Is that his name?
I don't even know the name of the dog.
Do you know anybody who has a dog named Poncho?
Oh, man.
No.
I don't think Poncho is the name.
I mean, what is this?
We're about to have a war between the weekday shows and the weekend shows up here, man.
Wow.
The first ones in there on Monday, and I can't believe they're having this discussion. Every once in a while, I'll hit that show because I need my ignorance for the week. So actually, I tune in for about 2 seconds for my laugh of the week. But they're talking about the wrong thing because there it is. There's their little mongrel sitting in the corner with his tail up and his poop out, peeing and pooping in the corner. How wonderful for them!
Oh man, I can't believe you guys did a full.
And Bucky, do you think the studio smelled any funkier than it usually does? It's always stench in here.
Stinks. Yeah. What else is this? No. But when we come in, it's an ice box, so you know maybe the poop froze when Hogan and I get in there. The air conditioner is so cold in there. Maybe it's frozen. Maybe it's like a frozen popsicle in the corner. Poopsicle.
I guess it's better that it was cold when y'all got here, right? Because if it was hot, then it would have smelled even worse.
Oh man.
Oh no! And by the time our show is over with, when Craig and Jeff get in there, they always complain, "Man, it's warm in here." So it must have been the poopsicle was starting to melt by the time they came in.
So we're going poopsicle.
That is gross. I'm going to tell you something. That's beyond gross. That is so disgusting.
It's not even the grossest. So it's not even the grossest bathroom related incident we've had this year at this place.
Unfortunately, he's right.
Well, wait a minute. But this isn't the bathroom. This is where we sit and work and do shows.
Yeah.
So Buck exercises.
Oh,
you had your hands in your face and your. Oh.
I know, man. I'm disgusted. It's gross. And you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna bring my Pyrenees in tomorrow and sit him in the corner. And when he's got a crap, I'm gonna say, "Hey, right there."
But don't do that. That's only gonna affect us.
It's gonna be like
it's okay. It seems like an okay thing to do.
We're gonna go get some AstroTurf like they do in the airports and just have a little corner for the dogs and they can all go there, apparently.
No, how about take the dog outside? leave Lefty and Poncho at the farm or wherever you're coming from.
Lefty and Poncho.
Now he's added another random name.
Seriously, you're going to talk about how terrible somebody is and how disgusting the type of people that they are, why not you not be one of them if you think it's so bad?
Goodness.
Agreed. I'm with you.
You know?
I'm with you, Buck.
Oh, my God.
Thanks for your insight.
Hey, Buck, you did have COVID at one point. Did you lost your sense of smell, right? Is it possible you just don't have your sense of smell?
No.
Back?
No. My wife made me lasagna last week. I've been smelling and eating lasagna for days.
All right.
I know what a pile of crap smells like. I have a big, great Pyrenees dog, and he's got those piles where you can't miss them. If you step in them, that's your fault.
Mm. Oh, wow.
When you started with my wife, I was a little bit concerned about the direction.
And Chad went in there and picked it up?
Chad picked it up. He didn't notice until like 2 o'clock. He was...
How about getting on the phone and calling up Butt Rash, a gatekeeper, and Green Jeans and tell them to come in and pick up their dog crap?
Green Jeans.
Dude, these nicknames are spectacular.
I know. They seem like they would
I'm
get us in trouble.
I'm not even sure who he's talking about anymore. Oh, I don't know who these guys are. Unreal.
The dudes that are in
I know. All right. We'll be listening tomorrow because I'm sure you and E are gonna be talking about this a lot.
It's going to be great.
Oh, I'm going to go and put an X marks the spot in that corner now. Gross. That's gross, Rod B. You know that's gross. You're a clean guy.
It's disgusting.
That's dirty. That's filthy.
It is. I agree. I was fine with the random smells in here, but now that I know what was the source of one of the smells was actual poop, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
We need to bring some Febreze in here. Febreze this whole damn place. We do.
Right? Get a hazmat unit up in there. I got to wear a suit in there tomorrow morning, a hazmat suit.
Oh, man.
What a bit that would be. All right, Buck.
Thanks, Buck.
Your insight, your intel, man. I'm so sorry about the day you've had. That's brutal. That is brutal. There he goes. Bucky Godbolt.
So he was down on the floor. We thought Bucky does exercises every morning, and he gets on the floor.
He's on
stretches,
all fours, man.
Stretching. He's on a yoga mat he lays on, does all these types of exercises, calisthenics, I don't know, all kind of stuff, whatever he's doing. But He was down there very close to it. So nobody was closer to that poop than Bucky Godbo.
He's on all fours inhaling.
His face could have been right near. We don't know.
On all fours inhaling number two. He was getting ready for one radio show 3 days after his last one. Unbelievable.
Man.
So Deuce Gate, Dog Poop Gate, Poopsicle Gate, whatever the hell we're calling this thing. Bucky.
And he declared.
Has like, given us a prime suspect.
And he declared basically a radio war on the weekend shows.
Yeah. Well, just that one weekend show.
That one weekend show.
I'm not even sure what show he's talking about.
Because
he's giving them different nicknames every 2 minutes.
Green jeans? I don't know what that means.
He's poop face? Rash?
I don't know what half that stuff means. Yeah, sometimes Bucky might have had a problem with that show before this incident. Because he had a lot to say.
Boy,
about
it better have been those guys.
Because
otherwise,
know.
That was.
You have no idea who it is.
That was a harsh indictment of one of our weekend shows.
Well, BK investigates. You got to get to the bottom of it, man. We're going to have to figure it out probably before the end of the show or by next show.
We will.
Because we don't need people getting called out who are innocents. We need innocents being called out here.
Now, I've got like half the Horn staff texting me.
Oh, no,
phone.
People are into it now. Yeah, people are hitting me up, too. So
I got people trying to absolve themselves of any blame. It wasn't me. I didn't smell it. I didn't do it.
It wasn't Wags, no. Wax is good. It wasn't Wax.
So he says.
No, it wasn't Wax. I know Wax is. Well, I don't know his dog, but I've seen his dog. His dog is big. His dog would leave a big one.
Nobody's off the hook. Just like the third floor incident during the snowpocalypse.
Wow.
Nobody is off the hook.
Yeah. That one was more disturbing. Sorry.
Yeah.
That one was way more
Human
disturbing.
Human feces is way more disturbing this than dog feces.
This could have easily been overlooked by the owner, and he just wasn't paying attention to the dog. People do that. The one in the bathroom, that one was, that's a true violation of the human code.
Yeah, you know you did that if you're a human.
Yeah, you violated the code of humanity. Somebody else had to pick that up, man. Mm-hmm. That is a violation of the human code. You got to clean up after yourself. No other humans have to be doing that. All right.
Yeah, agreed. You should
Come
be
on
cleaning
now.
Up after your dog, too. But,
yes, you should.
That's, I guess, more defensible than... What are we doing here? Where are we at in society today? Come on, Coach.
Where are we at in society today?
Like Craig Way said, as long as it wasn't a Todd Packer one. Then, Todd Packer one, you got to think about, like, firing somebody.
Yeah.
Like a Todd Packer practical joke? Yeah, like, we got to fire you, man.
Yeah.
You can't
do this in the studio.
You got to do this.
Leave
I think
it
it's
there.
Funny.
Yeah. You can't do it and not leave it there. You sure as hell can't do it and leave it there.
Yeah.
What a show we've had. Well, no excuse for that, Rod B. I don't think there'd be too many excuses for Steve Sarkisian if Texas lost to Arkansas week two of the 2021 season. We opened the show talking about this. Riley Gates of 24/7 Sports dropped an article over the weekend, no pun intended with the dropped, I promise, predicting when each Big 12 team will suffer its first loss of the 2021 season. And Gates' pick for Texas was Arkansas, week two, in Fayetteville. He's predicting an early season non-conference loss for the Longhorns. I don't know how kindly this fan base would take a loss to Arkansas, Rod B. You're talking about a team that went 3-7 last year.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a team that has been the bottom feeder of the SEC West for the last few years. You're talking about, obviously, a former major rival for the University of Texas, and there's no foreseeable revenge game for the Longhorns.
Yep.
Like, this is the last scheduled matchup between Texas and Arkansas. These teams have only played five times since 1992. So it doesn't happen very often when Texas and Arkansas get together. So you'd have to be dealing with the ramifications of this loss for a long, long time. That would be a pretty inexcusable loss, I would think, Rod.
Yeah, I love the staff of Arkansas, right? I love the love the OC, Kendall Bryce. Love the DC, Barry Odom. I think Sam Pittman's done a really good job with the culture. They return a lot of starters, 20 out of 22 starters. They got a really talented wide receiver there in Treylon Burks. He's one of the best in the country. He's really, really underrated. And I remember those games they lost. They lost to Mississippi State by 7, and Mississippi State was, I think, a 16th ranked team in the country at the time. They lost by 2 points to Auburn, lost by 3 points to LSU, 2 points to Missouri. So I get it. They were close in a lot of games, close but no cigar. To me, they are not ready to make that kind of leap yet, where they can just be beating a Texas who is clearly a more talented team. I think it's more likely Texas loses to Louisiana. to start off the season than lose to Arkansas. Arkansas is a good team, but, man, Billy Napier's done a really good job. His coaching staff has been raided a couple of times already, so he's had to bring in new coaches. Still went 11-3 in 2019, 10-1 in 2020. That includes a win over Iowa State, who played in the Big 12 title game, and he returns his starting quarterback, Levi Lewis. He also returns six of the seven O-linemen who played significant time, returns most of the defensive starters, all but one defender who played at least 50 snaps on defense. To me, Louisiana is a team that more likely could upset Texas, and they'll be ranked, actually, when Texas plays them before Arkansas. Well, Arkansas will be a test, though, on the road. But here's one thing I think that Sark has, actually, that's going to help him in that matchup versus Arkansas. Sark doesn't have a lot of experience game planning versus certain teams, at least being able to see what they've done on offense and defense. And I know Arkansas will be bringing in something relatively new look, but he's got some experience at Alabama playing against Arkansas. You know what I mean? So at least there, and all these coaches, by the way, because a lot of them, half of them come from Alabama anyway. So at least there is some familiarity with the scheme they're going to try to run, how they're going to try to exploit you. They've seen the Kendall Browse version of the air raid, that extreme air raid. So it's not something that's going to totally stupefy them. At least you do have a basis to try to build a foundational game plan.
For the record, Alabama beat Arkansas 52-3 last year.
So it wasn't even, they didn't even threaten them.
Wasn't even close.
Okay.
That would be an inexcusable loss for Texas. Yeah. I'm with you. I think Louisiana is a better football team than Arkansas.
I believe that too.
I think if Louisiana and Arkansas met on a neutral field, Louisiana would win by two touchdowns. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you that a loss to Louisiana would be acceptable.
No.
But that is a ranked team. That is a team that beat Iowa State by multiple scores last year on the road.
With guys out. Remember, they had guys out because of COVID.
Due to COVID. Mm-hmm. An Iowa State team that won a New Year's Six Bowl that obviously made it all the way to the Big 12 championship game and beat Texas on the way last year. Louisiana is much better than Arkansas. Plus, you don't have to deal with Arkansas fans. Like, neither loss is good. I don't want either of those losses to happen. But, man, gun to my head, I had to pick a loss between those first two non-conference games for Texas. It's Louisiana, no question.
Yeah.
Now, if you lose to either one of those
teams, I was going
to
say either one is going to be a...
It's a problem. And you don't close the book on Steve Sarkisian as a head coach by any stretch.
No.
I mean, Mack Brown started 1-2 his first year here and turned out to be the second best coach in Texas football history, won a national championship. So you don't close the book on a coach overall, but... And if you're losing one of those two games, it sort of feels like you could probably close the book on winning the Big 12 this year.
Because there
are, I mean, both OU and Iowa State are way more talented than Louisiana and Arkansas. So if you're losing to one of those two games, I know you can get better as the year progresses, but it'd be hard for me to believe that this is a conference championship winning team if they don't start the year at least 2-0.
Yeah, even though we saw Iowa State do it.
I know.
They got you. But you're right. I totally agree with you. But I'll just bring it up. Because this is the thing, too. If Sark and Texas lose to Louisiana, and Louisiana's going to be a ranked team, Louisiana's going to be one of the better teams in the country next year, still could end up winning double-digit games. It'll still be, you know, disaster in Longhorn fans' eyes, only because it'll remind them of Tom Herman losing the first game. And we know, just being football minds, Maryland was a horrible team. They weren't even a bowl team in either one of those years where they upset Texas. I think one of those years they won like three games or something. It was really, really bad. So they were bad teams that ended up beating Texas to start the year. Louisiana would be different. Texas still shouldn't be losing Louisiana, but it'd be different because Louisiana's going to be a good team. They're not going to be a bad team. Even if they don't win double-digit games, they're going to be better than either one of those Maryland teams. They'll win more games than those Maryland teams won combined in both those years where they beat Tom Herman.
Yeah.
But still, Longhorn fans, they'll harken back to, oh, no, here we go again.
Yep.
That's what he's got to avoid. He's got to avoid that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you got to stop losing games as a favorite.
Yeah, that's good point.
That's what doomed Tom Herman, right? You can't be successful as the head coach at the University of Texas if you struggle as a favorite.
Are they favorites versus Louisiana?
Yeah, they will be.
They will be?
Yeah. I think the opening line...
Because Louisiana will be ranked higher, I believe, than Texas, won't they?
It'll be pretty close.
It'll be pretty close. Mm-hmm. They're probably both in bottom 20s or bottom teens.
Yeah, like I would say in the 15 to 25 range.
Yeah.
Both teams will be there.
Yeah.
So 110 days away, Rod B. Not that I'm counting.
Right. I can't wait. Just a little taste of watching a sporting event live like we did in Moon Tower, watching Austin FC. It's got me thinking about football season, tailgating, getting back around my peeps. So really excited about that. All right, let's talk football, actually, in Rod's rant of the day. We'll talk Dallas Cowboy football. Dan Quinn's been saying all the right things, but then again, so did Mike McCarthy. He even lied. I got the damn job. We'll examine whether Dan Quinn has a little bit more substance behind his statements, and we'll talk about how they're going to use Micah Parsons. They're hinting that they're going to move him around. We'll talk about all that and more in Rod's Rant of the Day on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to get into the Dallas Cowboys a little bit. This new look, revamped defense that they are building right now and constructing right now, mostly based off that 2021 draft where they decided to invest heavily on the defensive side of the ball, starting with Micah Parsons and how they're going to use him. I think the linebacker room is where they really wanted to focus. Something when Dan Quinn's evaluation in terms of how he wanted to build this defense and whatever he envisioned, he did not believe the linebackers for the Cowboys were going to be able to effectively implement and execute the scheme that he was going to build. Now, we don't exactly know what the scheme is. I recently saw NFL.com. They were asking Dan Quinn about this scheme. People want to know exactly what this new scheme is going to look like. Remember, he's usually a guy that comes from a 4-3, cover 3 matchup zone scheme when he was with the Legion of Boom and even with the Falcons. That's what he's known for. Not saying he can't deviate from that. But here's what he had to say when he was asked about his scheme. Earlier on, he was being very vague, and I think now they're getting down to some more specificity as it relates to his scheme. When he was asked about his scheme, what it's going to look like, he says that it's going to look more like a 3-4 base, but a 4-man front, which means it could be 4 men down in a 3-point stance. He could have 2 in a 3-point stance, 2 on the outside. Is it stand-up technique? We don't really know. He could switch it up. I'm sure it means he's going to be a multiple front. But he acknowledges that it's going to be out of a nickel base, which NFL teams play 60 to 70% of the time. So he's going to play nickel. And even though he does have a lot of linebackers, you're not going to see him playing 3 or 4 linebackers on the field at a time. He's not that idiotic. He's going to play a lot of nickel, and it's going to be how he uses his linebackers. And in his NFL.com article, he was asked, what is the scheme going to look like? And have you changed your mindset and your philosophy about defense now that, you know, you have had your struggles with that 4-3-3 cover 3 scheme that he was running there with the Legion of Boom and had so much success, one of the greatest defenses in NFL history. But with the Falcons, didn't work as well because you didn't have the personnel. You didn't have Richard Sherman, didn't have a Bobby Wagner, didn't have a Bruce Irvin, didn't have an Earl Thomas. You don't have those pieces. How do you adapt your scheme? It didn't work so well, and he didn't adapt it very well with the Atlanta Falcons. The reason they were able to get to a Super Bowl was because Kyle Shanahan was running the offense. It was not because of that defense at all. As a matter of fact, they made it in spite of the defense. I went and looked at the total scoring defenses for Dan Quinn since he got done with the Legion of Boom. 14th, 27th, 8th, 25th, 22nd, 19th. Most of the time, his defenses are going to be average to below average. The only time he was elite once in that time span since 2015, since he left the Legion of Boom. But you go back and look at his 5 previous seasons of defense based on DVOA, another expanded metric to look at, 17th, 30th, 17th, 19th, 18th, nothing special. Right? He hasn't been special as a defensive play caller and a defensive architect since the Legion of Boom.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
Was that top 10 finish in scoring defense? Was that the year they made it to the Super Bowl?
That was 2017 based on what I'm looking at here. Yeah.
Got it.
2017.
Okay. Yeah, the hope
and
is,
they went 2016.
Okay. The hope is, or there are a couple of hopes, but the hope is just not having to be a head coach will help Dan Quinn. Right? Some guys are great coordinators, but they just can't deal with the extra responsibilities that go into being a head coach.
Very true.
And they sort of lose their identity. They lose who they are, what got them that job in the first place. The hope is, not having to be a head coach anymore, Dan Quinn can rekindle the flame that he had in Seattle for those Legion of Boom days like you're talking about.
Yeah, I totally agree. So that's kind of my concern looking at him. He's never really had an elite defense looking at him. I'm sure, like I said, in certain categories you can look at it and consider it to be elite, but most of the defenses have been average to middle of the road. And here's what he said when he was asked about how his defense is going to be, how they're going to revamp it. He said, I wanted to do as big an after action on my own self to make sure what I could learn from things that went well and things that didn't go well. He said, so I wanted to kind of do a 360 on the whole process first, the scheme side. Then he went on to say after he said in the 3 months before. Between getting fired and joining Mike McCarthy's staff, Quinn said he stripped down his belief system. That included defensive cutups from 2013 to 20 that brought me to the system changes that I wanted to implement on the next lap around. He said, I didn't want to do just another rinse and repeat. And so that was a big piece on what I wanted to do. So he's not going to do the same thing that he's been doing, which is a good news for Cowboys fans because what he's been doing just ain't been working. He went on to say, certainly a combination of things that I'm going to bring into the foundation that have been there, as well as some new things that I wanted to bring into it and how we play in the style that we would do that. So we still don't know exactly how it's going to look, but I think there is some faith that he is going to change. He's not going to be stubborn and try to bring back the exact same scheme that he had with Atlanta. He's going to try his best to modernize his scheme. That also could mean it could be a disaster and not work. I mean, guys, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got not only – I think the new personnel is his biggest – that kind of the infusion of new talent, I should say, should be the biggest factor in the turnaround. Yes, the scheme is going to matter, but just having more talented players, upgrading the talent pool, I think is going to be the biggest factor in the change. His scheme and how he utilizes the players, that's going to be great. But having Michael Parsons, who's probably going to start – I think Michael Parsons is going to start day one. I saw a Pro Football Focus article – that projected all of these starting lineups for every NFL team. They have Michael Parsons and Jalen Smith as the two starting linebackers for the Cowboys. Would make sense not picking up Leighton Vander Esch's fifth-year option that they want to go with Michael Parsons and Jalen Smith. And some people say, well, why Jalen Smith over Leighton Vander Esch? And I was wondering that a little bit, too. Of course, we know that Jalen Smith signed the contract, so that's more money and capital invested in him. But here's something else that might have led to why they prefer Jalen Smith and also why Micah Parsons might be a versatile defender in this new Dan Quinn scheme. Jerry Jones was asked about Jalen Smith now that they have so many different linebackers, drafting Jabril Cox, also drafting Micah Parsons. And he said, quote, the thing I see from the linebacking crew uniquely is pressure. He said, pressure, we know that Jalen Smith can get some pressure, but I could see that group really being a big part of the plan to pressure. Generally, that was the key thing that we were looking at as far as the fit for us, weighing the pressure perspective. So I think with Michael Parsons, who is known as a guy that can apply a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. Like they were saying in the draft that he's your best pass-rushing linebacker.
Yeah, he was a defensive end in high school and a damn good one, too.
And he's fast as hell. So the speed rush off the edge, I mean, it's almost I would assume he's going to be one of the elite speed rushers off the edge just because he's so fast. But, yeah, so they want to use him in a pass rushing. Here's Dan Quinn talking about it, too. He said, quote, there are third down packages I'm going to be in. This is actually from Michael Parsons. I apologize. Michael Parsons here. It's a quote from him. Quote, there are third down packages I'm going to be in on first and second down. I am going to be in the box on third down. They're going to find a way to get me to the quarterback, which I'm excited about. I think Dan Quinn is a great coordinator, one of the best ones. He gets his best players on the field and in a position to make plays, and I have full faith in him. So it seems like they got him working at the Mike linebacker right now. They want him to really kind of envelop himself into the Mike linebacker role and the Will linebacker role, which he's going to be playing on standard downs. But it seems like when they get passing downs, they're going to put him on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're going to like put him on the edge traditionally as literally a defensive end, stand-up DN, or if they're going to use him in more blitz packages off the edge, stunts, twists, things of that nature. But philosophically, you see how they want to use him. Run downs, off the ball linebacker, standard downs, I should say, off the ball linebacker. But if you know that it's a passing down, if it is a predictable passing situation, they want him rushing the quarterback. And they believe him and Jalen Smith are elite at that. And I will say Jalen Smith, for all the criticism thrown his way, he is a really good pass rusher. He seems to have natural instincts just rushing, but that simplifies his role too. Yeah. He doesn't have to read keys, right. Doesn't have to read offensive line. No, you just literally just run at the quarterback and go get that guy.
Just run up through the A gap or the B gap.
Yeah.
That's not that hard. I mean, he's not an edge guy. Like Micah Parsons might be able to be an edge guy.
Yes. He's an A-gap blitzer.
Jalen Smith is not bend. Like, yeah. He can't get around those big tackles in the NFL. So.
Yeah. He's more of a B-gap blend.
I wonder, you know, it's interesting how it's going to work with Micah Parsons. Like, I wonder if they just view him as a guy that they could substitute in for Randy Gregory, right? Like, DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be on the field obvious pass-rushing situation.
Yeah.
He's your best edge player. He's your highest-paid edge-rushing player. But Randy Gregory is a guy who, you know, finally was able to play a whole season last year and did some really, really good things. I just kind of figured he'd be the guy in those obvious passing situations opposite of Tank Lawrence. Maybe they feel like Micah Parsons can rotate in on those third down spots.
You know, maybe it's because you remember those NASCAR packages from the Giants back in the day, right? They had all those great defensive linemen. Philadelphia copied this as well, too. When they would decide, we're just going to put all of our best pass rushers on the field. Let's make sure we get them in predictable passing situations, and let's have enough players where we can, you know, who are versatile enough on the defensive front, we can move them around, shift them inside and outside. But at the end of the day, if it's third and eight, third and nine, we're going to have Strahan on the field, you know, Whit Tuck on the field, Whit Osiyomi-Nura on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, don't put all of them. And I would like a NASCAR package. Find a way, you know, hey, Randy Gregg, we need you to play inside only on this third down passing situation. Have, you know, Micah Parsons playing the DN. Have DeMarcus Lawrence out there at the other DN. Find you another pass rusher that can play inside, that can rush, and maybe it's just Neville Gallimore. But, I mean, just the NASCAR package, I think that's something they might be looking at, too.
I don't hate it. I mean, the Cowboys don't have a ton of depth on the edge.
No.
Right? I mean, they drafted two guys in the third round to try to help with that, with Odighizuwa from UCLA and Chauncey Golston coming from Iowa. Like, outside of DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, there's not a whole lot there, and hell, maybe there's a chance Micah Parsons is this team's third-best edge guy.
Yeah.
Which is a scary thought, kind of. Because we didn't see a ton of that from Micah Parsons at Penn State. That just wasn't his role. But I don't know. I'm always down for getting your best 11 on the field.
Exactly.
And in those situations, if Micah Parsons is best utilized as one of those guys, then get him out there.
Here's an interesting thing, though. I'm going to get your thoughts about it because you're a Cowboys fan and we can wrap it up. I saw that the Pro Football Focus projected starting lineups had DeMonte Kazee at the free safety, Donovan Wilson at the strong safety. I thought those would be flipped more, but yeah, because I don't know. I thought DeMonte Kazee was kind of probably going to be a hybrid linebacker, but maybe not. They do have Kelvin Joseph and Trevon Diggs starting, and Jordan Lewis at the nickel.
That's all expected.
Is that all expected? Like, I was asking
corners.
Any of this. What about the safety?
You know, I'm curious who's going to win that other safety job, right? Maybe it's Reggie Robinson.
Out of Tulsa last year.
And
he was a corner.
Uh-huh.
But they're trying to turn into a safety.
They never do a good job of that. But like you said, they always try. Call Earl Thomas.
I'm with you, man. I don't disagree with that. You know, I'm all about Carl Earl Thomas and Jeff Heath.
Carl Earl Thomas.
But even Malik Hooker's out there, right, as a safety. I would bring in a lot of options at safety. I think that's where the Cowboys are going to be weakest, and it's not a newsflash to Cowboys fans because the Cowboys don't invest anything in safety, so they've probably been the weakest position talent-wise on that team for a long time. You start looking at the D-line, though. Randy Gregory, Brent Urban, Neville Gallimore had a strong year. Actually, Tristan Hill. Actually, he had a strong, right? He showed a little bit last year. DeMarcus Lawrence, Trevon Diggs, and Kelvin Joseph. Love both of those guys. I actually like the linebackers now with Micah Parsons added to the mix. Jabril Cox in a year or so is going to make an impact there, too. The safeties is the only position I don't like. I don't like the Cowboys' defense at the safety position.
No, they've got the worst safety core in the league.
I think you're right.
They do.
That's terrible.
No, neither of their safeties are adequate players. That's a problem.
That's a problem.
It's a very important position in any defense, and you brought up the Legion of Boom. I mean, that's what made the LOB as good as it was.
Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas.
Yeah. Yep. The Cowboys don't have half those guys. Seriously, a 3'6" version of Earl Thomas would be better than the Cowboys' safety. Right
a miniature
now.
Earl Thomas
yeah,
would be
mini Earl and mini Cam, I think, would be more effective than the dudes the Cowboys will be trotting out there. Great stuff. Rod's rant of the day, talking Cowboys football. We'll see what Dan Quinn can do with this relatively new bunch of Cowboys defenders in 2021. We, of course, are the home of the Dallas Cowboys here in Central Texas. When we come back, let's talk a little NBA. The playoffs are set. The play-in tournament starts tomorrow. We'll talk about the Spurs' chances to make some noise and a rivalry brewing for the Dallas Mavericks. It's next. Back here on the Triple Option with RBKD. I am BK Brad Kellner, hanging out with the All-American Rod Babers. No KD today, no KD this week. He is off on vacation. He will return to the show next Monday. An averagely deserved vacation for Kevin Dunn. All right, Rod B. The NBA regular season came to a close yesterday. Pretty entertaining day of NBA basketball.
It's been entertaining down the stretch, actually.
It has been very entertaining.
Nobody's watching it, but it has been entertaining.
Yeah, every team played yesterday. So 15 games, all 30 teams in action. And going into yesterday, we knew the 20 teams that were going to be a part of the NBA postseason. Remember, you've got four more teams this year due to the play-in tournament, so 10 teams in each conference technically qualifying for the postseason. But we didn't know all of the seed lines going into yesterday. So there were actually some tense moments for fans of various teams, including the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavs didn't find out their fate until the conclusion of the action yesterday. Dallas has locked up the number 5 seed in the Western Conference. So the good news for the Mavs, they avoid the play-in tournament, which the Mavs actually knew going into yesterday that the lowest they could have finished was 6, which meant, they weren't going to be a part of the play-in tournament. So that's good. The bad news, though, for Dallas, well, they've got to play the L.A. Clippers.
Hey, you got to vanquish this foe at one point. Obviously, you're going to be meeting them a lot in the playoffs. The basketball gods want this to happen.
Mm-hmm. They played a great first-round series in the bubble last year.
Yeah.
And the Clippers won it in 6. There were some pretty great moments. Luka Doncic, the buzzer beater in overtime in Game 4 to even up that series at 2. But ultimately, the Clippers a little bit too much for the Mavs. The Mavs dealt with injuries. Kristaps Porzingis missed the last few games of that series. Luka Doncic actually missed some time in that series as well. But even a fully healthy Mavs squad, I don't think, beats a fully healthy Clippers squad a year ago. So the Mavs will get their shot at redemption, but I know Mavs fans, including myself, were hoping that Dallas would get to take on Denver in the first round.
Denver's not a bad – I mean, Denver's a good team.
Not that Denver's bad. I mean, look, Denver's a good team. If you're a top four team in the Western Conference, you're pretty good. Jokic is going to be the MVP of the league. But Denver without Jamal Murray, that to me is a more beatable team than a Kawhi Leonard, Paul George-led L.A. Clippers bunch. So maybe the Mavs will still find a way to get it done, but I like their chances less going up against the Clippers than I would have going up against the Nuggets. I have to give the Clippers a lot of credit, though. So the Lakers are in the play-in, Rod, but people still believe the Lakers are like the biggest threats in the Western Conference.
Yeah, everybody's basically saying they are primed for the narrative that this was the hardest road to ever win a championship because they're going to be coming from the seventh seed all the way to win it all.
If they lose 2 games in a row, they're not even going to be in the playoffs because they're in the play-in tournament, but they're still the Lakers. Like, LeBron's healthy, healthy
It's hard
enough.
To picture LeBron losing first game, I guess, and being out.
He won't make excuses. Well, he'll tell you he won't make excuses. Then he'll make about 5 excuses for why things didn't work out.
That's true.
But he'll also follow that up by saying he doesn't like to make excuses. But LeBron's back. Anthony Davis is back. The only reason the Lakers aren't like a top 3 seed in the West is because those dudes missed a ton of time in the second half. So there's a belief, Rod, that the Clippers like tanked purposely down the stretch to be on the opposite side of the bracket from the Lakers.
Wow.
So the Lakers, if they win their play-in game against the Warriors on Wednesday night, then they'll be the 7th seed, which means, they're on the bottom half of the bracket. Meanwhile, the Clippers, as the 4 seed, are on the top half of the bracket. So the Clippers perhaps trying to avoid the Lakers as long as they could. And you say, well, okay, where's the credence to that, BK? The Clippers' final 2 regular season games, Rod, were against the Rockets and the Thunder. The 2 worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
And they lost both of them. And the Rockets and Thunder have been trying to tank so
far. I was going to say, the Rockets are trying to lose.
The Clippers out-tanked the Rockets and the Thunder.
That's hard to do.
Tip of the cap, they deserve a lot of credit
for
this.
Hard to do,
I'm ticked as a Mavs fan that they wanted to play the Mavs and they wanted to avoid the Lakers because it's going to end up screwing the Mavs in the process. But they out-tanked 2 teams that have been tanking harder than arguably any team has ever tanked.
Yeah.
So
that's some active tanking right there.
That's what happened. So Mavs-Clippers next weekend. That matchup is set, but you got the play-in tournament. You looking forward to this thing, Rodby?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Golden State Warriors Lakers matchup.
That's obviously. Honestly,
the rest of them, I could. You know, I'm excited for the Spurs, right? Spurs Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited because I know a lot of Spurs fans. But I think if you are trying to really promote this, you know, first year of the play-in, the inaugural play-in, and you're trying to get as many people locked in and engaged to watch it as possible. You'd like to have the Lakers and the Warriors in the playoffs, of course, mm-hmm. as an ideal scenario. But if not, you got those two facing off, two MVPs, two Hall of Famers. I mean, LeBron and Steph they faced off in four straight finals.
Yeah.
And now you got them facing off in your first play-in weekend. That's sexy to me. I like that. Second best matchup, or the second sexiest matchup, I should say. Is it the 8-7?
In the East?
The Wizards and the Celtics?
Yeah, I think so. You got star power there, right?
Well, just the Westbrook show.
Westbrook, Beal,
yeah,
Washington.
I mean, if you haven't watched Westbrook this year, you've actually done yourself a disservice as a basketball fan. Mm-hmm. He's been fun to watch.
He has been. And Boston's got, obviously, Tatum and Jaylen. Oh, no, Jaylen Brown's out. That's huge for Boston. I forgot he got hurt late in the season, so that's a big loss for them. But, yeah, Lakers-Warriors is obviously the most intriguing of the matchups.
That's sexy,
sexiest matchup.
The Lakers, LeBron says Steph is the MVP, too.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm playing against the MVP.
Head games from LeBron?
It definitely is head games from LeBron.
Feels that way. I don't think it's going to affect Steph. Like, Steph's too good to let that type of stuff bother him. But 9 o'clock for that game on Wednesday. So the Eastern Conference games are tomorrow. The Western Conference games are on Wednesday. For the Spurs, they're taking on the Grizzlies. Memphis,
it's a tough matchup, man.
Point favorite in this one.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough matchup for the Spurs in so many ways. The Memphis defense is really impressive. It's a top 10 defense. Lead the NBA in steals. That leads to their fast break offense, which is, they have more fast break points than any team in the league. They're third in points off turnovers. So they have this really balanced, kind of homogenous way that they play. Mm-hmm. And one, their defensive effort also leads to their offensive spark.
I hate betting against Pop this time of year. And Pop technically has never been a part of this. I mean, nobody has, right? The first year of the play-in tournament. But I know the Spurs had a disappointing year. They lost their final four games of the regular season. They played a great schedule, but they still lost their last four games, so they're not coming in with a ton of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Spurs have a lot more experience in the playoffs than Memphis does.
Memphis is
they've never
team.
Really been there. A couple of Valanciunas.
Right. Yeah, John Morant's their best player. He's never played in a game as big as this. So we'll see. We'll preview that game. Spurs-Grizzlies, that's 6:30 on ESPN on Wednesday. Once again, Memphis a 3-point favorite in the format for the NBA play-in tournament. The winner of the 7-8 game
is
the 7th seed.
They advance.
They're good. They advance. They're the 7th seed. They'll take on the 2 seed. The loser of the 7-8 will take on the winner of the 9-10 game. And the winner of that game is the 8th seed. So if the Spurs lose on Wednesday, they're out. If they win, they'll take on the loser of Warriors-Lakers, and they'll have to win that game to get in as the 8th seed. If they lose either of those games, they'll be out.
Yeah, done.
So it'll be fun to watch. I know the players hate it.
They hate it.
It's not necessary. I mean, it's more playoff basketball, so I'm not going to gripe too much. But and it gives the Spurs a chance, so the Spurs definitely can't gripe this year.
He's trying to keep as many fan bases invested as possible for the postseason.
They need to recoup money from last year.
They do.
It's as simple as that. We'll see if this thing goes beyond this year, but I'll be watching. I think a lot of basketball fans will be too. We'll take your thoughts. 337-3776, a little NBA conversation as the postseason picture is now kind of set. The real series begin this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Your game ones in the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Oh, everyone's favorite topic, college football realignment. The Pac-12 has itself a new commissioner. And yes, the expansion rumors are back. Should Texas make a call to the Pac-12? We'll get into it next.